I was hot as a pistol. That is my all-time favorite sports video. I've watched it 20 times. 17-year-old basketball manager with autism gets into a game, last 4 minutes of the game, last game of the season, first time he's ever been on the court in a game. He hits 6 3-point shots. You talk about coming in off the bench and lighting things up. Just an amazing story. Well, another favorite sports story of mine happened in the NBA. It was March 28th, 1990, that Michael Jordan scored a career-high 69 points in a single game against the Cleveland Cavaliers. Now, a few nights later, a reporter was interviewing rookie Stacey King and asked him, "What's been your favorite memory so far in the NBA?" And he said, "I'll never forget the night that Michael Jordan and I together scored 71 points in a single basketball game." You know, whether it's sports or business or music or drama, we all understand that there are superstars out there who are just better than we are. Now, some of us in this room, some of you are really, really good at what you do. But let's be honest, most of us are not what the world would call superstars. I mean, no offense, we're somewhere between average and maybe above average, but we're not making national news. We're not living our lives in the spotlight. People aren't paying us millions of dollars to play on their team or to act in their movie or to lead their corporation. You know, if you know anything at all about team sports, you understand the concept of first string and second string. You understand that the first string players, they're the starters, they're the ones who carry the team. By the time you get to the pro level, they're the superstars. Second string are those who come off the bench, maybe lend a hand at some point in the game. Maybe they spend every game on the bench. Their purpose is just to help the first string players practice hard during the week. To be honest with you, I've spent most of my life on the bench. If it wasn't for the last year of middle school church basketball, where I was the starting center, I might add, if it wasn't for that team, I've lived on the bench. I've been second string. And truthfully, with this Leadership Nelson County thing that I was a part of, I got to be honest with you, I felt like second string with those guys a lot. Here's all these young, sharp leaders, and they let a guy like me into that mix. And I get around people sometimes, especially business people, I think, who really think strategically and they act decisively and they're real type one kind of leaders. And I'm tempted to just kind of look for a spot on the bench. That's just where I've spent most of my life. Well, in the Bible, there are first string players and there are second string players too. They're the superstars, and I don't just mean Jesus Christ superstar. I mean, in the Old Testament, you had people like Noah and Abraham and Moses and Daniel. I mean, over and over again, we see world changers in the Old Testament. In the New Testament, you got Mary and Joseph. You've got Paul and Peter, John the Baptist, John the Apostle, Mary Magdalene. And these are names that most of us are familiar with. Their stories are the ones that kids learn about in Sunday school. We talk about them in church. We highlight them week in and week out. But friends, there are other men and women in the Bible, other players in the unfolding drama of history that left their mark too. They might not have been first string, but their stories are just as important. Their stories are just as relevant. If it wasn't for them, the superstars might never have gotten as far as they did. And so we're going to spend 4 Sundays kind of looking at some second string players in the Bible. 4 men and women who came in off the bench and they were used by God. I mean, maybe it's hard for you to relate to Moses or to Peter, to Mary or to John. I mean, it's hard for me to relate to people at that level as well. But these second string guys, well, it's encouraging to me to be able to relate to them because they were able to kind of do their small part towards something that was much bigger than themselves. Second string doesn't have to be a bad thing. God might use a second string player to help turn the game around. So we're going to talk today about a man named Jethro, and I do not mean Jethro Bodine, okay, if any of you go back that far. Jethro in the Old Testament was the father-in-law of Moses. Now, Moses was one of the greatest men who ever lived. Moses led the children of Israel out of slavery in Egypt, and he delivered the Ten Commandments straight from the hand of God. There is a bust of his face in our nation's capital. Jethro, on the other hand, was a priest from kind of an unknown area. He was from a family of shepherds. And he shows up for a couple chapters in the Bible, his 15 minutes of fame, and we never hear from him again. We really only remember him because of his son-in-law. Now, if you're married, you understand the dance of relating to in-laws. If you have grown children who are married, in other words, you're the mother-in-law or you're the father-in-law, you understand that dance from the other side of the dance floor. It can be awkward sometimes. In-law relations can be tough. I mean, let's face it, maybe some hoodlum married your princess and you've just never gotten used to having a son-in-law. Or maybe you married a girl and you had no idea that her parents were Attila and Mrs. Hun. You know, you just didn't know what you were getting into. My brother Dave and my son Daniel talked me into watching a creepy movie on Halloween last week called Get Out. And I'm telling you, if you're worried about in-law relations, watch that movie, forget marriage, you'll give up dating altogether. I'm telling you, it gets crazy. Well, Moses' father-in-law is about to come for a visit. He wants to see what's going on. He wants to see how his daughter's husband turned the ancient Egyptian world upside down. Only when he gets there, he doesn't like what he sees. And like a lot of in-laws, he feels compelled to tell Moses what he doesn't like. And Moses listens to his advice, which might be the most shocking part of the whole thing. Moses pays attention because sometimes second string guys come in off the bench and they know exactly what they're talking about. They know exactly what they're doing. And so let me kind of set the stage for you real quickly here, and then we'll dig into our text today, which is Exodus chapter 18. So the Jews had been in slavery in Egypt for 430 years. That's a long time. 430 years ago was 1590. They've been in slavery a long time. That's how long they suffered in bondage in Egypt. Finally, God calls Moses to lead them out of slavery into the promised land. And Pharaoh is not too excited about letting them go. And so God has to send a series of plagues on the land to convince Pharaoh to release the slaves. And so finally, they leave, they're free, and Moses suddenly finds himself leading thousands, actually hundreds of thousands, some have suggested up to a couple of million Jews through the wilderness toward the promised land. Now understand, these are people who've lived generations being told exactly what to do, exactly what's expected of them. They never made any decisions for themselves, and this newfound freedom brought a lot of joy and excitement, but it also brought lots of opportunities for tension and for disorder. Without strong leadership, their freedom would become chaos, and the chaos could lead to anarchy. And Moses knew the trip was going to be tough, and so he sent his wife Zipporah and his two sons back to her parents in Midian for a while he kind of tried to organize all this mess. And after some time, Moses' father-in-law Jethro brought Zipporah and the kids out to visit Moses in the desert. And the Bible says that Jethro and Moses talked about all that God had done in Egypt, and they shared together, they sacrificed to God together. And then it says this in Exodus 18, beginning in verse 13. It says, the next day, Moses took his seat to serve as judge for the people, and they stood around him from morning till evening. And when his father-in-law saw all that Moses was doing for the people, he said, what is this you're doing for the people? Why do you alone sit as judge while all these people stand around you from morning till evening? See, apparently, Moses was the preacher, the teacher, the judge for these couple of million Israelites. Now, to his credit, he is committed to the task. You got to respect him for working so hard to see that the peace would be maintained. He didn't run from the job. Man, he rolled up his sleeves and he did everything he could to make sure that everything worked out for the best. And I'll be honest with you, we could use more of that kind of work ethic today. In our homes, in our schools, on the job, right here at church. I mean, the reality is some jobs aren't very glamorous. From working in the nursery to digging out our new parking spaces in the back to preparing the communion schedule. Not very flashy jobs. But if those things aren't done out there, then what we do in here doesn't work out very well. They help make all of this happen. This past Sunday night, we had dozens of kids come to our building for games and candy and just a simple little reminder that God made them and that God is at work in their lives. It was our Halloween event. And some people got to do really fun things like wear cool costumes and hand out loads of candy. The dog dresses the lion was my favorite. But you know what? We had other people who made hot dogs and cleaned up the kitchen. And they didn't even get their picture taken. Not very exciting. But everybody's job is important. Each person who serves makes a difference. You might be more of a put on a costume, hand out candy kind of person. You might be more of a sit in the kitchen and make sure that everything gets taken care of and people get fed. But the point is, it's all important. So commitment's a good thing. But here's the problem. Sometimes commitment becomes overcommitment. Sometimes a strong work ethic leads to workaholism. And sometimes a good worker becomes a workaholic. And we've all seen that happen. You've probably heard me say before, if Satan can't get you to be bad, he'll get you to be busy. It is so easy to get so busy doing so many good things that the most important things in our lives kind of fall by the wayside. The most important people can get shut out of our lives. Moses lived his life by two creeds. See if these sound familiar. The first one was, if you want something done right, you have to... Oh, you've heard that one. Yeah. Yeah, if you want something done right, you got to do it yourself. Look at verse 14, or just listen to it again. When his father-in-law saw all that Moses was doing for the people, he said, what is this you're doing? Why are you alone sitting as judge, while all the people stand around you from morning until evening? See, Moses knew the people needed a judge. He knew they were vulnerable because they were used to being told what to do. He knew they were gullible because they would listen to anybody with a suggestion. So Moses decided it was his responsibility to make sure the people were given sound advice. It was up to him to tell them exactly what to do. And there is a real temptation to feel like nobody can do the job as well as you can. I struggle with that. And some of you do too. It can be hard to let go while other people are trying to learn. But we all have to crawl before we walk and walk before we run, right? And that takes patience. And let's face it, if people aren't given a chance to learn, then we're not only robbing them of the satisfaction of serving, but we're killing ourselves in the process. I mean, people who really struggle with this are either perfectionists or those who are especially talented. And you know what I mean. OCD kind of perfectionist people just can't bear the thought of something not being done right. And people who are really talented kind of can't bear the thought of second string people coming in and doing a job that they know they could do better. And so it's hard. If you want something done right, you have to do it yourself. That's how Moses felt. But the other creed he lived by, maybe this sounds familiar, was I'm indispensable. When Jethro asked Moses why he was doing all the work, Moses said in verse 15, because the people come to me to seek God's will. Whenever they have a dispute, it's brought to me. I decide between the parties. I inform them of God's decrees and laws. He says, look, they come to me. They're depending on me. They need me. And I don't mean to be critical of Moses. Moses was the man. But he kind of felt like this whole Exodus thing was sitting squarely on his shoulders. And I get it. A lot was riding on this. But you know what? God was still kind of in control. And God was bigger than Moses. And God was going to make sure this thing worked out, whether he was there or not. Sometimes we feel like the business or the factory or the classroom or the church can't get along without us, that we're irreplaceable. And to a certain extent, you might be right. If you were taken out of the equation, things would not run as smoothly as they are right now. But let's be realistic. People come and go. Sometimes people serve in one place for a season. Sometimes they serve in one place for a lifetime. But most of the time, the organization outlasts the individual. The organization outlasts the individual. And killing yourself with overwork because you think you're indispensable just takes you out of the game faster. Leonard Sweet wrote, "Death can be nature's way of telling your body to slow down." You think? Constant stress and constant strain hurts us physically and mentally and emotionally and relationally and spiritually. And I've seen it happen over and over again in the church. We get so busy doing things for God that we don't have time for God anymore. That was kind of Moses here. He's so busy doing God's work, he's out of touch with God, his Father. And so Jethro's advice was so profound for him. Look at verse 17. Moses' father-in-law replied, "What you are doing is not good. You and these people who come to you will only wear yourselves out. The work is too heavy for you. You cannot handle it alone." This is not good, Moses. You're wearing yourself out, Moses. This is too heavy for you, Moses. You can't handle it alone, Moses. All allegations that could have ticked Moses off. Has anybody ever said that kind of thing to you? You're in over your head, too much for you, you cannot succeed. And the temptation is what? To work harder to prove they're wrong. Moses was smart enough to realize that his life was out of control. He realized that he was the bottleneck of the organization. He was not fixing the problem, he was the problem. So look at what Jethro says in verse 19. "Listen to me, and I will give you some advice, and may God be with you. You must be the people's representative before God and bring their disputes to him. Teach them the decrees and laws and show them the way to live and the duties they are to perform. But select capable men from all the people, men who fear God, trustworthy men who hate dishonest gain, and appoint them as officials over thousands, hundreds, fifties, and tens. Have them serve as judges for the people at all times, but have them bring every difficult case to you, the simple cases they can decide themselves." He says, look, Moses, be the people's representative before God. In other words, if you aren't loving the people and praying for them before the Lord, you're not going to be very effective as their leader. Make sure that your relationship with God is strong first, and that will empower you and protect you to do your job. Friends, I would challenge you, if you have people in any way who work under you, whether they're employees, subordinates of any kind, maybe kids in your classroom, kids on your bus, whatever it is, you ought to be praying for them. It is not a violation of the separation of church and state to pray for people. Pray for people under your care. You're their representative before God. Secondly, Moses, teach the people God's laws, Jethro said. This was kind of a paradigm shift for Moses. Don't just sit around waiting for people to break the law and then pass judgment. Teach them God's laws so they know what to do and how to act. Teach people the foundational principles of God's laws so they can understand the basis of judging so that people can help you do the judging. Next, Moses, select capable and trustworthy leaders to share the load. The key to delegation is to select the right people for the right jobs. And it's not just finding people with the right skills. This is important. He was to find trustworthy men who were not vulnerable to bribery. Melody Green wrote, "If you can be bought at any price, it doesn't matter the price. It only matters that you can be bought." Find trustworthy people. See, you can train skills into a person, but it's hard to train dishonesty out of a person. And so find people you can trust and then help them know what they need to know. Finally, Moses, appoint leaders over thousands, hundreds, fifties, and tens. Not everybody is gifted to lead 1,000 people. Some can only handle 10 people. So he needed to match their ability with their capability with their opportunity. Friends, Jethro was hot off the bench. He kind of came in out of nowhere, evaluated the situation, and offered great advice. And what's the result? Verse 23, "If you do this, and God so commands, you will be able to stand the strain, and all the people will go home satisfied." I heard a marriage principle one time that said, "A shared joy is a double joy, and a shared burden is half a burden. And, you know, I think to a certain extent that works with leadership too. When we share responsibilities in a team environment, we multiply the positives and we diminish the negatives. We position ourselves to succeed over the long haul. We enjoy the journey more along the way. And so Moses was smart enough to do what Jethro suggested. He didn't get defensive. He didn't fight back. He didn't send his father-in-law off with some shallow promises to, yeah, I'm going to get on that right away. We'll be in touch. No. He took his advice, and it changed his life. So listen, if you're a leader, this message is for you. And if you're saying, I'm not a leader, this message is not for me, let me just remind you the most fundamental, basic definition of leadership is that leadership is influence. That's all it is. It's influence. And everybody everywhere is both a leader and a follower, because all of us at one time or another are being influenced as followers, and we are influencing somebody as a leader. We have that capacity. Now, I get it. We're talking about second string leaders, because the reality is most of us are not super high capacity leaders. This is a church service. It's not a business seminar. But you know what? I think everybody can get something here, because everybody can do something. You know, I was thinking this week about second string players and people coming in off the bench. Have you heard in the news who is helping the firefighters in California fight wildfires? Goats. Hundreds of hungry goats are being brought in to devour brush ahead of the fires to create a barrier where there's nothing to burn to help stop the fires. Goats. So if you're saying, I'm not second string, I'm not even in the game, I can't influence anybody, I don't have anything to offer. If goats can save lives by eating brush, you can do something, okay? Everybody can make a difference somewhere. And so we all need to learn some lessons from Jethro today, the second string guy who made a difference in Moses' life. So let me give you these quick principles. Here we go. Here they are. First of all, acknowledge your limitations. If, you know, I mean, the reality is no one person has the time, the talent, or the energy to do everything and do it well. We've got to share the load, whatever environment you're working in. School, work, team, church. We need each other. Nobody's all powerful. I've heard leadership guru John Maxwell say, speed of the leader, speed of the team. Have you heard that? The speed of the leader, the speed of the team. And I know what he means by that. At least I think I do. He means your vision as a leader, your pace, your passion, your work ethic, it's going to be contagious, and people are going to become like you. But let me tell you what I think. I think better than speed of the leader, speed of the team is health of the leader, health of the team. The health of the leader, the health of the team. We can all understand how toxic leaders undermine productivity and they destroy morale. But you know what? I've seen highly driven leaders become so demanding and so unrealistic that they just ruin the chemistry of a team. There's such a frantic pace, it's so unhealthy, things need to change. Health of the leader, health of the team. Health of the leader, health of the family. Health of the leaders, health of the church. Healthy leaders understand they aren't all powerful. Now, number two is establish your priorities. Andy Stanley said a great goal of leadership is only do what only you can do. Now, think about that. He said, look, only do what only you can do. Now, you can't just say to your boss, you know what, I'm not going to do that because other people can and I have more important things to do. You might find that you have more time on your hands than you thought you did if you start saying that to your boss. But the goal is to spend your time doing what you do best, what you bring to the organization, and help other people do the same thing. Number three is to gather and train leaders. A good leader does not just gather followers. A good leader gathers other leaders who can continue the impact. Jethro told Moses to find other leaders and turn them loose to lead. But notice the principle is gather and train leaders. The main reason delegation often fails is because people are given a job to do without the resources or the training to carry it out. We don't want to micromanage, but you also don't want to set people up for failure either. Have you ever noticed that the best college and pro coaches have a steady turnover of assistant coaches? And it's not because they're impossible to work with. It's because they do such a good job choosing assistants with high capacity leadership and then pouring into them that these people go off and become head coaches somewhere else. It's gathering and training other leaders. Number four, quickly, is got to keep your ego out of the way. You know what happens when you delegate authority and share leadership? Some people like the other leaders better than they like you. Some people are drawn to the very ones who work under you and don't know as much as you do and wouldn't even be here if it wasn't for me. But they like them better. And you have to be okay with that. Okay? Everything's not about you, about me. When Gail and I helped plant a new church in South Carolina, I mean, we poured into people and the lives there for 5 years, and we felt like God was calling us back to Indiana, and so we prepared to move. And on my last staff outing day, our last staff retreat, we went on a hike together out in the woods, Jeremiah and Kim and Michael. And for our going away party on the Sunday, our last Sunday, those three performed a song that they had written for me. And if you know the song, Walking in Memphis, it was to the tune Walking in Memphis, but the song was Walking with Marcus. That's what they called me because they needed two syllables. So here's the chorus. Walking with Marcus. Walking with our feet 10 feet off the trail. Walking with Marcus. Go ahead and go, but please leave Gail. That was it. That was the chorus. You know, everybody likes her more. They do. Everywhere I go, people like her more. She's more popular than I am. She's nicer than I am. She's cuter than I am. They just like her more. And you know what? I mean, I'm kidding, but listen, leadership is not about being the most popular. It's not about being everybody's favorite. It's about influence. And whether you're a mother teaching a preschooler to pick up toys, or you're a dad teaching a daughter to ride the lawnmower, or you're a teacher enlisting a student to help grade papers, or you're a CEO who's empowering an employee to take over a project and run with it, lead well because more gets done when you do. So we acknowledge limitations, we establish priorities, we gather and train leaders, we keep our ego out of the way. And then the final thing, just real quickly, is that we accept ultimate responsibility. That's what leaders do. Jethro told Moses, the hardest decisions are still going to come to you. Because that's the way leadership works. Some decisions only you can make. President John F. Kennedy said that the day before he was inaugurated, President Eisenhower said this to him, "You will find that no easy problems ever come to the President of the United States, because if they're easy, somebody else has already taken care of them." That's the way leadership works. A leader has to be willing and ready to make tough decisions. Teamwork, look, teamwork may be better than solo performance, but the buck has to stop somewhere, and that's leadership. Got to have the guts to lead. Okay, I'm going to give you a principle that's going to lead us into a bottom line, but let me give you the principle first. Delegating leadership does not mean that you relinquish your authority. It means you multiply your influence. Now, that's too long for a bottom line, but just let it sink in. Delegating your leadership does not mean you relinquish authority. It means that you multiply your influence. So to tighten that up a little bit, here's the bottom line for today. I know I've said a lot of stuff, so here's this. Shared leadership multiplies influence. Shared leadership doesn't weaken you. It multiplies influence. As you delegate authority, you empower others to work with you. Shared leadership multiplies influence. And you know what can happen when second string leaders are allowed to fulfill their God-given potential? Well, let me show you. We're going to watch a follow-up to the clip we watched a minute ago. Show this real quickly here, and then we'll wrap up.
Have an update on one of the most popular basketball stories ever on this broadcast. Here's Steve Hartman on the road.
Hey. How are you? Good.
Not many high school basketball managers get a party on their behalf, especially not 10 years after graduation.
It seems like just yesterday it was a magical night back in 2006. Coach pointed his finger at me and I stepped onto the court for the first time in my varsity career.
J-Mac ended up shooting 6 three-pointers, one right after the other. He had 20 points total. And each time a shot went in, his teammates and the crowd went a little crazier. His last basket, right at the buzzer, created total mayhem. After we first told this story, big things started happening for J-Mac. I mean big things.
A country was captivated by an amazing story on the basketball court.
President George Bush requested an audience with him. J-Mac co-authored a book about himself.
Thanks, J-Mac.
And perhaps the biggest change of all.
It gave me confidence that I can do anything.
Let's go!
After graduation, J-Mac became assistant coach at his old high school. His passion for the game hasn't faded a bit. His connection to the students, as strong as ever. The only difference is that now, above it all, number 52 hangs near the rafters. His retired jersey, a reminder to us all that there's greatness waiting in every kid. We just need to call their numbers. Steve Hartman, On the Road, in Rochester, New York.
Okay, shared leadership multiplies what? Influence. You know, I gotta say that probably most of us know what it feels like to sit the bench, whether in sports or just in life. You know, we're not superstars. We know what it's like to kind of disappear among people who are smarter and stronger and faster and all that. But here's the amazing thing about God. God says, hey, I want you on my team. I do. I want you on my team. And you say, oh, God, you don't want me. There's people who are smarter than me. I'm not the best looking guy in the room. I'm not the most talented gal in the room. No, you don't want me. And God says, no, I do. And I'm not calling you to be good looking or smart or fast. I want you. And that's the beauty of the gospel. We get to do this together. Let's pray. God, thanks for today. Thank you for your word that is so incredibly practical. And I thank you that there are leaders in this room, in this community, in our country, and in the world who are what we would consider high-capacity leaders. And there are others of us maybe who kind of hang out on the sidelines and we do our little part. But God, the reality is that you take all of that and it's with your power that you infuse into it that things get done and the world gets changed. And so I pray that we would acknowledge first that you have called us to be part of your family and your team and to serve alongside you. And God, thank you for that privilege. And then I pray today that we would each do our part, as big or as little as it might be, to make a difference. We love you, Lord, so we do it all in your name. Amen.